Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Please do be seated. I wonder if we should have had a practice of that one before the service. What do you think? It passeth knowledge, that dear love of thine. Who knew that and who didn't? You knew it? Hands up. Oh my goodness me. Well, there you go. See. Well, we used to sing this when I was very, very young in crusade tents. Anyone done that in the crusade tents? And it's Moody Sankey stuff, isn't it, Mike?
Sorry?
The Moody Sankey?
Yes.
Yeah, Moody Sankey stuff. You heathen! But when I sang it as a young man, though, it didn't seem so high. And now I struggle to get those notes. Which is why I'm drinking water before the sermon, because it's lost the voice. It wasn't a criticism of you, Mike. It was about my vocal cords. But thank you. Okay, so we want to look at this passage this morning from Luke 13, verse 10. And it's the healing of this woman who's bent and she can't straighten herself up. And we have another episode in which Jesus focuses upon someone who has real need and delivers them from that problem. And I suppose if we'd been in that synagogue on that day Jesus was teaching the synagogue, I suppose if we'd been in that synagogue, we probably wouldn't have even noticed this poor woman. She would have been at the back. Remember, it's a synagogue. So the men are in the front and the women are at the back. She'd have been, you know, a distant person, someone that we didn't focus on. And if we had seen her, we probably, like everybody else at the time, would have thought, well, you know, she's been 18 years crippled with this spirit. It's her own fault. Because, of course, that kind of illness was something that you brought upon yourself. You know, if you're a good and faithful person, then God blessed you. And if you had all these illnesses and stuff, it was a sign that you'd been doing something wrong. So, you know, we would have looked at this situation and seen something completely different than Jesus saw. He saw the need. Max and I, we went into John Lewis in Milton Keynes this week. And we decided we'd go and have a little look in the audiovisual department of the big tellies. Because that's what boys do. That's what boys do. You know, girls go and get the shopping, the boys go and look in the audiovisual department. And we thought we'd look at the big tellies. So we looked at the big tellies. The first one we saw was just an ordinary big telly, but an ordinary big telly. And I said to Max, come on, Max, let's go and have a look at high definition and see if we can spot the difference between an ordinary telly and a high definition telly. Well, we looked at the ordinary telly. It was a programme. And you know what it's like in John Lewis. All the tellies are showing the same programme. So you can compare, you know, this one's a bit more coloured and this one. When you got them home, you wouldn't notice the difference. But when they're all there, it's all very, very clear. Went to the high definition television. Well, it was dramatic. It was totally dramatic. In fact, it was quite difficult because we'd been watching this lady who'd been doing something at the sink, a cooking programme or something, and it just looked like an ordinary programme. When it went into high definition, she had warts. Yeah. I'm looking at... And all of a sudden, you know, you forget the recipes, you forget what's going on. Because all of a sudden, it's all brought very, very clearly in focus. I was absolutely... I'm looking at Max, and Max is looking at me. We're looking for the remote control, trying to switch it off. It was dreadful. So, warning. They should issue a warning on these high-definition tellies. Because you see all kinds of stuff that you don't think you're going to see. Now, at the time of Jesus, you know, they looked at this woman and they saw all the need. And they perhaps cast her aside. So, you know, we don't want to look at that. You know, keep her away from us. The point is that God looks at us in high definition. He sees everything that we are, what we are like, and he still loves us and still has compassion on us. God doesn't, you know, kind of want us to just see us in a soft, hazy focus and pretend that the badness isn't there. He looks at us, sees exactly what we're like, and he realizes that we can't, you know, heal ourselves. And this is one of the points about this passage, that it's shown that this woman has had this problem for 18 years. And she's bent and can't straighten herself up. She cannot lift herself up. Only Christ can do that for her. And it's really important that we understand this. We cannot heal ourselves. We cannot make ourselves well. We can sometimes be cured. But healing isn't just about being cured. Healing is about being made well. You can be made whole, healed, without being cured. And, you know, you look at our broken society that's bent over. And you think, how are we going to make it better? You know, we can't make it better by social engineering, by political interfering, by economic changes. We can't make things well ourselves. Humanity has not got the capacity to lift itself up. Only God can do that. Only God has the answers to our aching need. And that comes very clearly out of this story. And Jesus says that, you know, it's not God who's made this woman the way she is. God puts the blame fairly and squarely. Look, Jesus says on this, says Abraham, whom Satan has kept bound. It's not God who's made someone ill. It's Satan who's made someone ill. We need to hear those words very, very clearly. So this is a really good healing miracle. But, actually, the thrust of this story isn't about the healing. The thrust of this story is about what the healing meant. Because, you see, Jesus could have gone to this woman after the service and said, look, whilst I was teaching, I noticed you've got a really, really difficult problem here. Can I help you with it? But Jesus doesn't. Jesus uses the opportunity, whilst he's teaching in the synagogue, to perform this healing in front of everybody. He used the opportunity to draw attention to something. And he made them very, very cross. In fact, so cross that we'll notice that Jesus is teaching in the synagogue. We never hear about him teaching in the synagogue ever again. They never invited him back. You know, if you've got someone who really upset you in church, wouldn't it be nice if you could just kind of, you know, do a little card and say, we won't have him back. Well, that's what they did to Jesus. They didn't want him back in the synagogue after this. And the reason is clear. The reason's clear why they didn't want Jesus back. He'd done something deliberately to upset them. Imagine the scene when this takes place. You've got the men sat in front. You've got the women at the back. And Jesus calls the woman forward. He speaks to a woman. That's the first thing that's going to make them cross. Because you didn't do that. You shouldn't be speaking to a woman. And you certainly shouldn't be speaking to a woman in a synagogue. Jesus breaks that rule. Now the second thing he does, he brings her into the centre of the synagogue, not where you expect the woman to be. So now the men are getting really cross. Because he's bringing this woman to a position that's above herself, where she shouldn't be. And then thirdly, he touches the woman. Now, you know, speaking, bringing her forward, touching her, these are all things that should not be going on in the synagogue. And Jesus is doing all this on a Sabbath. He calls her a daughter of Abraham, a term not found in any of the prior Jewish literature. Revolutionary language and revolutionary actions. And then, of course, he does something else. He heals her. And he shouldn't do that on the Sabbath either. Because that was a form of work which was expressly forbidden. He'd shown her compassion and healed her. And they would have been very, very cross. So, and of course the other thing that he does is he challenges that ancient belief that illness is somehow a punishment from God. And he puts the blame on Satan. So all this is going on. And Jesus is doing this in a way that deliberately provokes that confrontation. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's done it before in Luke's gospel. I think it was in Luke 6, Jesus healed the man with the withered hand. And he did that on the Sabbath. And we hear in that episode that before he healed the man with the withered hand, he looked around at them all. It's quite interesting. He deliberately goes out of his way to provoke this confrontation because he wants to make a point. I was reading a piece by Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury. And he was talking about the problems of being an archbishop. And I can't even begin to imagine how hard it must be to be an Archbishop of Canterbury. But he was talking about how hard it is, especially with the press. He says, you know, you speak to an audience and you think, well, I'm speaking to this audience and I'll speak in terms that they understand. And then they go and use your words. For instance, he was talking about when he spoke to an academic audience about Sharia law. And then the quotes that he made about Sharia law ended up in the Daily Mail. And he said, you know, if I'd known that I was speaking to that kind of populist audience, I'd have used different words. And he kind of been caught out of it. Jesus isn't caught out when he does this. He's in full control of the situation. He knows how the press are going to report it. And so he does something which is going to make a very dramatic point. He wants to take on this woman's illness. Of course he does. But he wants to do more than that. Jesus wants to challenge the very structures of society themselves. He wants to attack all of what's going on that corrupts society, not just healing individuals. So he heals the individual, but uses it to make a much bigger point. And this is a very important lesson for us, because it gives us a mandate to take on Jesus' mantle, to challenge the social taboos and the people who tell us that we should do things this way because that's how they've always been done. The reason why we sang Beauty for Brokenness, apart from the fact that it's got a lovely tune, it's got fantastic words. And it takes on the kind of language and behaviour of Jesus himself. Do you remember when Jesus spoke in the synagogue and he had that wonderful freedom charter when he said, you know, he's going to bind the broken heart and proclaim release to the captives? This is wonderful language. I mean, the language of Beauty for Brokenness is superb. Written by Graham Kendrick, the chap who wrote some other hymns which I really find quite puerile. But you know, credit to the man. This is a fantastic hymn with beautiful words. Take home your partnership news and read it. You know, it talks about the need to give people employment, the need to look after our world that God's given us and not pollute it and make it all horrible. Brilliant words, a superb prayer, and an encouragement for us to be involved in our world and not just to accept the status quo, but be prepared to challenge it. As Jesus challenged those structures which were passed on to him. You see, they told Jesus, you cannot heal on a Sabbath. And Jesus said, look, you guys, you look after your animals on a Sabbath. So don't tell me off for looking after a human being. And the whole point about the Sabbath was this. It was given to remind those Jewish people on a special set-apart day of their release from captivity in Egypt. Remember, they were brought out of Egypt, and so God gave them the Sabbath. It says that in the Ten Commandments, that was why the Sabbath was there, to proclaim release from captivity. And Jesus is saying, look, I've released this woman from being bound up by Satan for 18 years. That's exactly what the Sabbath's all about, release from captivity. And all you guys can do is criticize, and that's why he calls them hypocrites. And uses that horrible word, which basically means, look, you're pretending about religion. You don't really understand what it's all about. And so today we look at ourselves. We see a God who loves us in high definition. Jesus would have loved that woman, and God would have loved that woman just as much when she was bent as when she was straight. He had compassion and healed her and helped her. That doesn't mean to say he doesn't love each one of us with all of our ailments and difficulties. And we see a God in this passage today who tells us not to be content with things passed on to us just as they are, to be prepared to challenge, to stick our necks out, to confront wrong wherever we find it, and know that when we're doing it, we're doing the Lord's work.